Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear part of an interview with American actress and comedian Carol Burnett on what it takes. Then, Shep O'Neill will bring us this week's edition of American Stories. But first, Massimo Bottura is an Italian chef with plans to open two new restaurants in Paris and Naples next year. But wealthy diners will not be welcome. The food will be free, made from marketplace leftovers, and served only to the poor. Bottura's Refettorio Ambrosiana restaurant in Milan already feeds the poor and homeless. The restaurant is in an old theater in the outskirts of the city. Chefs at Refettorio cook free meals with leftovers from local shops. They use recipes created by Bottura and other famous cooks. Bottura told the Reuters news agency that he never thought leftover foods were a waste.
Breadcrumbs, some overripe tomato, brown bananas, they're just opportunities for us to show what we can do with our creativity.
Bottura started the project to reuse leftovers from the eateries of Milan's International Expo in 2015. The project receives support from the church foundation Caritas Ambrosiana. Unlike traditional soup kitchens, the guests do not have to wait in a line to receive food. Everyone gets served at tables. This limits the number of daily guests to 96. But Bottura says the experience can help his guests regain confidence and take back control of their lives. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says about one-third of the food produced worldwide each year is wasted or lost.
I'm Alice Winkler, and on this week's episode of What It Takes, Carol Burnett. The Carol Burnett Show was appointment TV viewing in my childhood. It aired for 11 years, starting in 1967, well before the era of Saturday Night Live, well after the era of Sid Caesar. It was modern American television sketch comedy with the lingering flavor of vaudeville and Tin Pan Alley. And it was hosted by a woman, groundbreaking in those days. But mostly it was just endearing and hilarious, and still is, as I can attest after many joyful hours of viewing this week. Exhibit A, Went with the Wind, one of the show's many Hollywood send-ups, with Burnett as Starlet O'Hara, making her entrance wearing a gown made of curtains with the curtain rods still attached.
What brings you to Terra?
You vixen, you. Starlet, I love you. That gown is gorgeous.
Thank you. I saw it in the window and I just couldn't resist it.
Carol Burnett's comedy is largely physical. Her face seems elastic, and she can set you off with a single raised eyebrow. So it's a shame you can't see the clips I'm going to play. But when you're done listening to this episode, go right ahead and pull up the Carol Burnett channel on YouTube. Just don't expect to get any work done for a few hours if you do. Carol Burnett was inducted into the Academy of Achievement in 2014 and sat down with journalist Gail Eichenthal to talk about her TV variety show, her early days on Broadway, and the complicated childhood that preceded it all. She was born in San Antonio in 1933, and Carol Burnett is her real name, Carol Creighton Burnett.
Actually, I wanted to change it at one point to Carol Creighton, because I thought that sounded good. But then I realized if I ever was successful, I wanted a boy in school. His name was Tommy Tracy. I was in love with him in junior high school and high school. I thought, well, if I'm ever successful, I want him to know. So I kept my real name.
Did he find out?
Oh, yes.
Carol Burnett's mother harbored her own kind of celebrity dreams. She wanted to be a journalist, the kind that interviews movie stars. So when Carol was just a little girl, her parents left Texas for Hollywood, leaving their daughter to be raised by her grandmother.
She was a hypochondriacal Christian Scientist. She was a character. She loved me more than anything, and she was my rock. And so I found out years later that she had been married 6 times. But she only told me about 3. I was writing a book, and I did some research, and boy, I found out she was quite the swinger. But she was, we went to the Christian Science church, and I went to the Christian Science Sunday school, but my grandmother was always complaining about her heart skipping beats, and that, you know, she didn't know if she was going to live another day. And so in Christian Science, you are supposed to, what they call, know the truth. And the truth is there is no sickness, there is no death, there is no, you know. But so I would be talking about, as a kid, you know, she'd be feeling her pulse and everything, and I would be knowing the truth for her. And then if I didn't know the truth well enough, she would ask me to get the medicine for her.
So a bit of a character who survived on government assistance.
We were poor. Every week, somebody would show up and give us a chicken to fry, and also with hand-me-down clothes for me to wear. And it was fine, but everybody, it was the Depression. So everyone we knew on our street and in the block and the area, we were all in the same boat. So it wasn't like I felt deprived. We ate, and I had clothes, and I went to school.
She did continue to have a relationship with her parents, though a troubled one.
My dad was an alcoholic from the get-go, from the high school on. But he was like a drunk Jimmy Stewart. Sweet. There was never a nasty, mean bone. And he just had that disease. And the kindest, most loving man I had ever known. My mother became an alcoholic a few years later. And then my grandmother and I moved out to Hollywood to be with my mother. And we moved in the same building, and she was down the hall, and Nanny and I had a one-room pull-down bed apartment right facing the lobby of the building. So I'd see my mother, and her dreams were shattered. She never really made it. She did get to interview a few of the people. So I remember she had an interview with, she freelanced for a while with Bob Hope, with Rita Hayworth, George Montgomery, people like that, but she never could hold down a job, and she was frustrated, and she started drinking, and but when she was sober, she was a lot of fun. She was beautiful, and my dad was handsome, and they made a gorgeous couple, and they were still friendly after the divorce. But I remember Mama coming down the hall, and Nanny and Mama and I would sit in this little kitchen, and Mama would play the ukulele, and we'd sing. And she had a great ear for music, and she could do harmony. So I would take the lead, Nanny would do the third part harmony, and Mama would do the intricate stuff.
Do you think that unusual childhood setup shaped you as a comedian?
I don't know, because as a kid, I was very quiet. I would, at times, my grandmother and my mother would argue a lot, and it was usually over money and liquor. because we had no money. Again, we were on welfare. What they called in Hollywood, it was called relief. And so we just waited from not paycheck to paycheck, but when the relief lady would come and give us some money for the next month. I would sit in the corner when Nanny and Mama would be arguing, and I would draw. I thought maybe I wanted to be a cartoonist and have my own comic strip. And I created a family that I would draw about, and they were called the Josephsons. My dad's name was Jody. So it featured the mother, who was Josephine, the father, who was Joseph, the teenage daughter, who was Jody, her kid brother, who was Joey, and their dog was Jojo. And I drew this family that was perfect. And that was my fantasy, to be have this with a picket fence and, you know. And but then when I got to junior high and high school, Mama said, look, you should write. You know, no matter what you look like, you can always write. And so I got into journalism, and I was editor of my high school paper and also my junior high school paper. And I thought, well, I'm going to major in journalism when I go to college. But that fell by the wayside. So as far as being, I was raised going to the movies with Nanny. We would save our money, and we would see sometimes 6 to 8 movies a week, double features, second run. And we'd go in and beat the prices, as Nanny would say. If we got in before 12 noon or 6 o'clock, it would be less. And in the movies, I lost all reality. That was my fantasy. That was my... And the good guys made it, and the bad guys didn't. And so I grew up never being cynical, because the movies were much... They weren't as edgy as they are now. You know, so, I mean, okay, Mickey and Judy would go put on a show, and they'd wind up on Broadway, and it would all be beautiful and wonderful. So I'm getting ahead of myself, but I wanted to go to college. And I had good grades in high school, and I had enough grades, good grades, to get me into UCLA. And Nanny said, we can't afford it. Our rent was $30 a month. She had a fit when they raised it to $1 a day. And the tuition at that time, back in the covered wagon days, was $43. We didn't have the money. She said, well, now you should go to Woodbury College, a secretarial school, so you can become a secretary and then someday nab the boss. Yeah, she always said, you're only as good as the guy you marry, you know. So that's why she did 6 times. Anyway, I said, no, I know I'm going to go to UCLA. I knew it. I saw myself on campus. It wasn't that I was hoping for it or wishing or praying. I said, no, it's going to happen. I just don't know how. Well, this one morning... it was my chore when I got up in the morning to look out into the lobby. Our room faced the lobby, and there were these pigeonhole mailboxes. And I could tell if we had a letter in one of those, and I'd run out in my robe, and this one morning there was a letter in our slot. I got it. It had my name typewritten on it, an address, and it even had a stamp. But it hadn't been mailed. It hadn't been canceled. Somebody had just stamped it and put it in the mailbox. I opened it up, and out came a $50 bill. I swear, to this day, I don't know who gave it to me. Nobody we knew had that kind of money. My grandmother didn't, or she would have said, look what I'm doing for you. Nobody in our building, everybody was on relief. That was my tuition. So I got to go to UCLA.
Burnett wanted to major in journalism, at least in part, to fulfill her mother's dreams. But they had no such major at the time, so she joined the school paper and to take playwriting courses, decided to major in theater arts English.
If you majored in theater arts English or anything, you had to take an acting course, 1A. You had to take scenery. You had to take costumes. You had to take lighting. You had to take sound and all the English courses and everything else. So I had to take this acting course. And I got into it, and I was terrified. So I picked a scene to do with one of my classmates that I thought would be easy. It was a scene from Noel Coward's Red Peppers. And I had to have a Cockney accent. And so I pretended I was Betty Grable with a Cockney accent. And we did it, and I heard the laughs. And I thought, this is it. I want to, the rest of my life, make people laugh.
To hear more of this interview with Carol Burnett, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Next, we bring you American Stories.
Our story today is called Feathertop. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
The long cold winter was gone at last. At first, the cold nights went away slowly. Then, suddenly, the warm days of spring started to come. There was new life again in the earth. Things started to grow and come up. For the first time, green corn plants began to show. They pushed through the soil and could now be seen above the ground. After the long winter months, the crows, the big black birds, were hungry, and when they saw the little green plants, they flew down to eat them. Old Mother Rigby tried to make the noisy and hungry birds go away. They made her very angry. She did not want the blackbirds to eat her corn, but the birds would not go away. So, early one morning, just as the sun started to rise, Mother Rigby jumped out of bed. She had a plan to stop those black birds from eating her corn. Mother Rigby could do anything. She was a witch, a woman with strange powers. She could make water run uphill, or change a beautiful woman into a white horse. Many nights, when the moon was full and bright, she could be seen flying over the tops of the houses in the village, sitting on a long wooden stick. It was a broomstick, and it helped her to do all sorts of strange tricks. Mother Rigby ate a quick breakfast and then started to work on her broomstick. She was planning to make something that would look like a man. It would fill the birds with fear and scare them from eating her corn, the way most farmers protect themselves from those black, pesky birds. Mother Rigby worked quickly. She held her magic broomstick straight and then tied another piece of wood across it. And already it began to look like a man with arms. Then she made the head. She put a pumpkin, a vegetable the size of a football, on top of the broomstick. She made two small holes in the pumpkin for eyes and made another cut, lower down, that looked just like a mouth. At last, there he was. He seemed ready to go to work for Mother Rigby and stop those old birds from eating her corn. But Mother Rigby was not happy with what she made. She wanted to make her scarecrow look better and better, for she was a good worker. She made a purple coat and put it around her scarecrow and dressed it in white silk stockings. She covered him with false hair and an old hat. And in that hat, she stuck the feather of a bird. She examined him closely and decided she liked him much better now, dressed up in a beautiful coat with a fine feather on top of his hat, and she named him Feathertop. She looked at Feathertop and laughed with happiness. "He is a beauty," she thought. "Now what?" she thought, feeling troubled again. She felt that Feathertop looked too good to be a scarecrow. "He can do something better," she thought, "than just stand near the corn all summer and scare the crows." And she decided on another plan for Feathertop. She took the pipe of tobacco she was smoking and put it into the mouth of Feathertop. "Puff, darling, puff," she said to Feathertop. "Puff away, my fine fellow. It is your life." Smoke started to rise from Feathertop's mouth. At first, it was just a little smoke, but Feathertop worked hard, blowing and puffing, and more smoke came out of him. "Puff away, my pet," Mother Rigby said with happiness. "Puff away, my pretty one. Puff for your life, I tell you." Mother Rigby then ordered Feathertop to walk. "Go forward," she said. "You have a world before you." Feathertop put one hand out in front of him, trying to find something for support. At the same time, he pushed one foot forward with great difficulty. But Mother Rigby shouted and ordered him on, and soon he began to go forward. Then she said, "You look like a man, and you walk like a man. Now I order you to talk like a man." Feathertop gasped, struggled, and at last said in a small whisper, "Mother, I want to speak, but I have no brain. What can I say?" "Ah, you can speak," Mother Rigby answered. "What shall you say? Have no fear. When you go out into the world, you will say 1,000 things and say them 1,000 times. And saying them 1,000 times again and again, you still will be saying nothing. So just talk. Babble like a bird. Certainly you have enough of a brain for that." Mother Rigby gave Feathertop much money and said, "Now you are as good as any of them and can hold your head high with importance." But she told Feathertop that he must never lose his pipe and must never let it stop smoking. She warned him that if his pipe ever stopped smoking, he would fall down, and become just a bundle of sticks again. "Have no fear, Mother," Feathertop said in a big voice, and blew a big cloud of smoke out of his mouth. "On your way," Mother Rigby said, pushing Feathertop out the door. "The world is yours, and if anybody asks you for your name, just say Feathertop. For you have a feather in your hat and a handful of feathers in your empty head." Feathertop found the streets in town, and many people started to look at him. They looked at his beautiful purple coat and his white silk stockings, and at the pipe he carried in his left hand, which he put back into his mouth every 5 steps he walked. They thought that he was a visitor of great importance. "What a fine, noble face," one man said. "He surely is somebody," said another. "A great leader of men." As Feathertop walked along one of the quieter streets near the edge of town, he saw a very pretty girl standing in front of a small red brick house. A little boy was standing next to her. The pretty girl smiled at Feathertop, and love entered her heart. It made her whole face bright with sunlight. Feathertop looked at her and had a feeling he never knew before. Suddenly, everything seemed a little different to him. The air was filled with a strange excitement. The sunlight glowed along the road, and people seemed to dance as they moved through the streets. Feathertop could not stop himself and walked toward the pretty, smiling young girl. As he got closer, the little boy at her side pointed his finger at Feathertop and said, "Look, Polly, the man has no face. It is a pumpkin." Feathertop moved no closer, but turned around and hurried through the streets of the town toward his home. When Mother Rigby opened the door, she saw Feathertop shaking with emotion. He was puffing on his pipe with great difficulty and making sounds like the clatter of sticks or the rattling of bones. "What's wrong?" Mother Rigby asked. "I am nothing, Mother. I am not a man. I am just a puff of smoke. I want to be something more than just a puff of smoke." And Feathertop took his pipe and with all his strength smashed it against the floor. He fell down and became a bundle of sticks as his pumpkin face rolled toward the wall. "Poor Feathertop," Mother Rigby said, looking at the heap on the floor. "He was too good to be a scarecrow, and he was too good to be a man. But he will be happier, standing near the corn all summer and protecting it from the birds. So I will make him a scarecrow again."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.